Thank you, Tanya. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the IGO INGO Working Group call on Wednesday, 6 November 2013 at 16 UTC. On today's call, we have Jim Bykoff, Chuck Gomes, Alan Greenberg, Catherine Gribben, David Hisney, Claudia McMaster-Temeritt, Jude Lauder, and Christopher Rassi. We have apologies from Wolfgang Kleinwachter, Avery Doria, David Maher, Osvaldo Novoa, Elizabeth Finberg, Joan Tang, Belly Liliev-Acosta, and I'm sorry I can't remember. Yes, Thomas Wickett is with us as well. I'm sorry for the attendance. And from staff, we have Barry Cobb, Mary Wong, and myself, Julia Charvelin. May I please remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you very much. My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm chairing this working group. And I have to apologize up front because I'm sitting at an airport trying my best to moderate this call, and I hope that the background noise is not too bad. As usual, the first item on the agenda is to ask you whether there are any suggested changes to the agenda and whether there are updates to statements of interest. I hear none, and since I'm trying to get into Adobe Connect but wasn't yet successful, I would need to defer to Barry whether there are any indications of updates to statements of interest in the chat.
This is Barry, negative, no hands raised.
Okay, which allows us to go to the next agenda item, which is the chair's update, and I'll be able to keep this very brief. You will know that we that the reply period of the public comment period has ended. We have put all the remaining comments, and it's just a few, into the public comment tool, and we will discuss those during this call, hopefully concluding our deliberations on public comments during this call. And the next step then will be for us to hopefully get closure or get a final version of the final report. There are some comments that you sent to the list, some of which we should discuss as a group to find a solution on how we present certain things in the report. But we will discuss this as we move along, and then hopefully we will be able to have at least something which is very close to a final version of the final report. And as you will have seen on the mailing list, we have reserve two time slots tomorrow and the day after tomorrow to continue our discussions. And the plan is to see how today's call works, whether there is a lot of need for discussion or whether we can close the items on our table quite quickly. Should we see substantial need for discussion, we will do both the call tomorrow as well as the call on the day after tomorrow, i.e. Friday. And if we see that there is no substantial need for discussion, then we will skip tomorrow's meeting to allow for more time to actually review the substance of the final report so that we then only have a call on Friday. Now, that's as far as the plan for today's meeting and the overall update is concerned. We hope to be able to pass on both the report as well as the draft motion before the motion deadline to the council so that the DNSO council can deliberate and hopefully vote on it during its Buenos Aires meeting. I hope that I haven't omitted anything important. Otherwise, I would like working group members Barry or Mary to step in. But unless you have further comments on this agenda item, I suggest that we move to the third agenda item. And at this point, I'd like to hand over to Barry, who will guide you through the remaining public comments that we received.
Thomas, it's Alan. I have a comment first.
Please, fire on.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how we're going to be submitting the report, but given that there may well be and are substantive changes in the there needs to be an opportunity for people to revise or submit a minority statement. I'm I'm not unhappy if it goes to council and the minority statements can come in over the next week or something like that. But there needs to be an opportunity. The minority statements that are submitted to the draft report may no longer be appropriate. And in the case of ALAC, we did not submit one, but we may well, depending on exactly what is in the draft report. So the process needs to allow it. I don't want to slow down the submission, but the final document needs to have there needs to be an opportunity to submit minority reports based on the content of the final report, not just the preliminary. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. That's a very good point indeed, and thanks for highlighting this. I would suggest or like to invite working group members to point out to me if you see the need to update minority statements or if you plan to submit minority positions where you haven't done so far, and we will then make sure that we agree on a timetable for you to submit those. But as far as handing over the report to the GNSO Council is concerned, I fully support what you said, Alan, that we can do so even without all updated or new statements being with us. And this is also something that that we've done when we before we published the first version of the report, as you will recall. But thanks for that. I can't see whether there are any more hands up. Otherwise, I would like you, Barry, to take over and guide us through the remaining public comments.
Thomas?
Jim, please. Yeah, please.
I just wanted to say, with regard, I have no comments on the report, but on the resolution that Mary prepared, we have some comments, and I thought we can probably get them out by tomorrow, so that by the end of business tomorrow. Would that be sufficient time, or does it have to be faster, or what?
Well, to be quite honest, Jim, certainly if you want to write something to the list, the sooner the better.
Okay.
Otherwise, I do hope that we will have at least some time during this call to discuss what Mary has sent to the list. So if you could share your views or concerns or requests for amendments with us during this call, that would at least give us an extra day to consider as a group. And certainly you are more than wholeheartedly invited to send your written reports in at a later stage, written comments in at a later stage. Is that something that would work for you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think we could get you our written comments by the end of today, our time.
Good. Thank you.
Hey, Thomas, this is Mary. Can I jump in here?
Mary. Sure.
Yes. Jim, thanks very much. And there seems to be some delay in the email that's coming out from me. I don't know whether it's an ICANN problem or computer problem, but I just wanted to note for the whole working group that there is a revised version of the draft motion that I tried to send out about 20 minutes ago. So, Jim, I hope that you can work off that one. In my email covering note, I explain why there are certain revisions. They're not substantive in many ways, but the language has changed in some respects. So if you guys haven't gotten that motion, I will try and resend it, but it will be dated the 6th of November. Thank you very much.
We have not received it at this point.
And this is Barry. I don't think anybody has resent it. It looks like there's an issue with the mailing list, mail servers, but the working group should get the most recent version, hopefully in the next 10 to 15, 20 minutes, somewhere in there. And if we do have time, we will try to review through that draft motion before conclusion of this call. Stefan, I see your hand is raised, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Stefan Hankins, ICRC Red Cross, Red Crescent. Yes, I just want to chip in that we would have also, a similar concern that, some of the points in the new version of the report do require to be revised, the minority positions, which the one that we had, that the Red Cross Red Crescent had submitted, made reference to the recommendations which did not achieve consensus. And of course, since these no longer appear in the report, you know, the minority reports, the minority position that we submitted is no longer, fully congruent. So, you know, we do need to provide that, and we will need, you know, a little bit of time. And then also with regard to the motion, but if there is a new version, of course, we will await it. I think we also have some concerns with some of the formulations which, you know, refer to the full names and identifiers of the Red Cross, Red Crescent in reference to the Scope 1 names. And, of course, you know, this does not fully, you know, make sense anymore, because the Scope 1 names are, you know, the designations of the protected emblems under the Geneva Conventions, the actual, you know, names and identifiers of the organizations per se are what is Scope 2 and what which protections have, you know, did not achieve consensus. So, you know, there are revisions to make this, to make the text, maintain its logic. So we will indeed, you know, require to know exactly when is the specific deadline, you know, we can submit these. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Stefan. Thomas, if you don't mind, I've got a couple of statements to make with regard to the report and the minority statements. I think first and foremost...
Please do.
So first and foremost, Stefan, with regard to your question about the scope definitions that we have defined in the final report, there are a couple of comments that we need to review as the working group, which we'll get to shortly after we review the remainder of the public comments. After today's meeting, I'm going to take in all the other changes as a result of our discussions today and incorporate those into the next final version. I want to send out, which will be version 1.5, to the working group so that working group members can review this version. And like we've said, we have a meeting scheduled for Thursday and for Friday at 14 UTC at which we can start to review any other changes that are required. With respect to the minority statements, and if the working group agrees with this approach, this would perhaps probably give those stakeholders that wish to file a minority position, perhaps we follow the same format that we've done in reference to the formal consensus call document as well as the public comment review tool, that they'll actually be supplement PDFs that will be sent along with the final report. And here's what we're dealing with. We have to have the final report submitted to the GNSO Council by the 10th, which is this Sunday at 2359 UTC. Might I suggest to the working group, and if you agree, is that we can extract the minority reports out of the primary final report and make them supplements, and that will allow us, the working group, more time to complete their minority position statements if they so wish and submit them, and then we can submit them as supplements to the final report. But that way we still make the deadline for getting the final report to the GNSO Council. And like I said, that gives us a little bit more time if there are changes to that. Alan, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, thank you. I would suggest that the process and the motion allow for minority statements to be submitted after the GNSO, prior to the report going to the board, but not necessarily in time for the GNSO to consider them. You know, if the minority submitter is willing to have the GNSO not consider them prior to its addressing the issue, then there should be an opportunity to submit it past that time. And the motion, I think, can allow for that.
Okay, Alan, so if I understood that correctly, would you prefer that there would be some sort of a whereas clause that there would be additional minority statements submitted over a course of time or something along that? Did I understand that correctly?
That's right. There should certainly be a deadline that has to be done. I'm just worried that just because of travel and other things, it may not get done in time for the GNSO to have considered it. And I wouldn't want the GNSO to defer talking about it in Buenos Aires because the minority reports may not all be submitted.
Okay, great.
What I'm saying.
This is Chuck, if I can get in briefly.
Please, Chuck.
Sorry, since I'm driving, it's a little hard. But I don't have any problem with what Alan is suggesting, but I think we should encourage minority reports to be submitted before the council takes actions on it. Now, if a provider of a minority report is comfortable with the GNSO council taking action without that report being in, that's fine. But as much as possible, I would encourage the minority report before the at least a couple days before the council takes action on this, if they do. Thanks.
Chuck, I agree with that completely. I just want to make sure that our minority report is not an opportunity to file one for the board's consideration is not denied because of the timing. And I wouldn't want to see the overall process delayed because of it either.
Great. Okay, understood. All right, so if I'm capturing this correctly and then anybody can correct me, action number one is that we'll migrate minority positions that exist within the final report now to separate them out as individual supplement PDFs to the final report so that we can submit the final report to the council. How about we set a deadline which will communicate out to the list that next Friday the 15th, any minority report positions that want to be appended to this final report should be submitted by next Friday the 15th so that I can get those included along with the final report that the council is already looking at. That should still give the council plenty of time to read through those minority positions in preparation for the weekend sessions as well as the GNSO council meeting on the 20th. And then just to tack on a point, Alan, that you made is even post-GNSO Council, there will be an additional public comment period as the report is submitted over to the ICANN board for their consideration. So there's an additional opportunity for any other public comments and, I guess, you know, more or less reattach any minority statement from a group. And then that way we should be able to still hit our time targets. Stefan, your hands raised, please.
Well, yes, I wanted to intervene a little bit earlier, but I mean, obviously, we need a very clear indication of what is the final deadline so that the minority report can be annexed so that it can be taken into due consideration by the GNSO. I mean, that's the whole logic and spirit of, you know, allowing for minority positions to be filed. And so we obviously will want, you know, these to arrive in time so that they can be considered by the GNSO Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. Alan?
Yeah, just a quick note. I appreciate that there will be an opportunity for comments during the board's comment period, but there's a subtle difference in making sure it's appended as a minority statement even after the fact, because then it goes into the historical record, whereas comments may well, you know, disappear from that record, if not disappear, then be invisible. So just the rationale for why I was suggesting it.
Okay, understood. Thank you, sir. Just to recap then, we'll be working through iterative draft versions of the final report up until I'm really wanting to call a final deadline for any changes to the final report by this Friday at 23:59. That way I can incorporate any last-minute changes and still make the deadline for the 10th. As for filing minority position statements, we'll give working group members until next Friday the 15th to send into the list any of those minority positions, and I'll be sure to that they are appended and included for any of the communication to the GNSO Council as the minority positions. So those, I think those are the two main deadlines. All right, great. Alan, I see a green checking mark. Thank you very much. And, Stefan, I still see your hand raised. Is that an old hand, or hopefully I answered your
It's an old hand. Thank you very much. Very sorry.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on over to close out the public comments that were submitted. From our last meeting, there were four that were submitted, one by the Red Cross, the business constituency, the ALAC, and I believe one individual had submitted comments. So for those that aren't in the AC room, we're on row four, and the first comment that was submitted was by the Red Cross. And I'll just point you to this, that I've actually cut. This is displayed on two different rows for the statement that was submitted by the Red Cross. Part of the statement had kind of more to do about eligibility criteria, so I extracted that out into a section below, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But this one for row four, essentially the Red Cross is encouraging the working group to continue supportive recommendations in Section 5.1 regarding Red Cross Red Crescent protection, and acknowledging the support by the working group for recommendations 1, 4, 5, and 8, and as well as they also included an additional statement to encourage the working group to endorse recommendations 2, 3, 6, and 7, which I believe revolve around the Scope 2 name. As mentioned earlier, I do have a few comments flagged in the final report that we'll review through, and actually we'll be starting with that section. But in general, that's kind of the abstract of this portion of the statement from the Red Cross. Is there any discussion or anything to mention by working group members with respect to this? Stefan, please.
Yes, thank you, Stefan Henkin, Red Cross, Red Crescent. Just to flag that the public comment that was submitted is submitted by a group of the National Red Cross, Red Crescent Societies. I believe it's 36 national societies signed on to the public comment. This follows a similar public comment provided, which had been signed by some 45 National Red Cross, Red Crescent Societies. Basically, the thrust of the public comment is to recall the concern of National Red Cross, Red Crescent Societies, such as the British Red Cross or the Swiss Red Cross or the Afghan Red Crescent and others, that, you know, their names be considered. So, of course, you know, these are part of the Scope 2 names and did not achieve the consensus. But this is what, you know, the National Society felt significant, you know, for them to take a stand on the importance for, you know, their names to be protected as they are generally protected also under their domestic legislation, and thus in their respective national languages and scripts. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Stefan. Any other comments with respect to this comment that was submitted?
Okay.
Sir. I'm just taking a few quick notes. Okay, so that will take us down to the next comment that was submitted, which is from the ALAC, which was submitted in, on, I think it was last Thursday or Friday morning. And fortunately, they did a good job of trying to summarize what their overall position was. And certainly, Alan, I'm going to read off what's listed off here in bold. And if I misstate anything, then please feel free to chime in. The ALAC particularly concerned that granting blocking level protections may prohibit other reasonable uses of the same stream, and the ALAC is not satisfied that the exception procedures outlined in the report would be effective. Their second item is, this being the case, it may be important to consider the principles that guided the ALAC in our participation in the activities that led to this report, and that the ALAC believes should guide ICANN in considering any special protections. First noting that ICANN should grant special protection to organizations that further the public interest, and in particular, those with a strong track record of humanitarian activities. However, such protection should only be granted where there is a history or reasonable expectation that the lack of protections would lead to misrepresentation of the organization, fraud, deliberate confusion, or malfeasance. The second notion is such protections, when granted, should not unreasonably impinge on the ability of others with a valid right to use the protected stream from registering such names for use which do not negatively impact the protected organization, nor use of the protected name with the intent to deceive users. Formal trademarks should not be necessary to demonstrate such a right. Thirdly, the procedures used to grant the protection exceptions identified in number two must be both inexpensive and fast. And lastly, that no top-level protections are necessary. Existing or new objection processes are sufficient. Are there any comments with respect to the ALAC submission?
This is Chuck Berry.
Chuck, why don't you go ahead and go first, please?
Okay, yes, sorry for others if I jump in front of you. It seems to me that in our response to the ALAC comment with regard to the exception procedure, that we could recommend that their comments be taken into consideration when the exception procedure is worked on and finalized. So I would just throw that out as a possible response. I think the exception procedure is going to have to be worked on further and carefully detailed. And in that work, seems like a good place to take into consideration the ALAC comments in that regard. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Chuck. Stefan, I see your hand is raised. Is that a new one or an old one?
I apologize. This is an old one. Sorry.
All right. No worries. Okay, Alan, please.
Thank you. Two comments. First of all, these comments were not really written in general asking for work group responses. But noting, and they will probably form the basis for in a minority statement. The part that you didn't present was a statement that said we are really worried that, although, and I'll phrase it differently than was in the statement, that although this work group has tried hard to come up with what there is consensus for, the sum total of those recommendations do not necessarily form a consistent grouping that can be implemented point blank. You know, they were looked at one by one and do not necessarily hold together as a consistent whole. And that conclusion led to the fact that the board or someone is going to have to pick and choose or perhaps augment to make a consistent whole policy. And that was the rationale for stating the principles that we were using, because we feel that despite the best efforts of this work group, there is going to have to be further work done at some level. And identifying what our goals are, in any case, we thought was important. But not necessarily for this work group to modify the report based on them. Although I do appreciate Chuck's suggestion in that case, and I think the report was clear that that what it was presenting in terms of exception processes were simply the basis for the start of the discussion. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you, Alan. So in terms of kind of a recommended action, I think especially within the section of implementation for incumbent GTLDs and the principles around that, we've mentioned that an IRT would be formed, and that is the basis. I think that is also a whereas clause in our draft, or I'm sorry, no, it's an actual resolution statement in our draft resolutions to have that IRT review team formed. So in terms of a recommended action that will make sure that there's language added to the section of around exception procedures, that these comments also be considered by the IRT when they get to that point and recognize that more work does need to be performed.
Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you, Al. Give me just 1 second, please. And just as a reminder, I'm taking some brief notes, but again, after this call, I'll re-listen to the MP3, make sure I capture everything that I stated here. Okay, I see no other hands. So I'll move on down to the next comment, which I believe was submitted by the business constituency. And they, in their submission, had basically extracted our recommendations from the report and listed their support or no support for the recommendations that were offered up. I think in summary, they did support the Red Cross, Red Crescent recommendations that were listed in the report, as well as the IOC recommendations. When we go to review through these sections of the final report on, as far in terms of the next agenda item, I think that their support or not support for some of the recommendations may affect one or two of our current consensus levels in the recommendation, which I have highlighted in this draft version. But outside of getting into the details on each of their support or no support for the recommendations, I think it's pretty straightforward here. One point to note is that I did add their responses within their public comments to our consensus call document, noting the date that it was submitted and that these were via the public comment period, as well as any extra statement that they made as to rationale why they supported or didn't support is also included in that consensus call document. And as mentioned, that will be a supplement attached on with the final report as it's sent up to the GNSO Council. So in the sake of time, I didn't really plan on going through any of these particular recommendations in detail. Again, as I mentioned, where I think that there was a possible change to the final report, I have highlighted in that when we review through it. Does anybody have any comments or statements with regards to the business constituency submission? Okay, seeing or hearing none. And I'll go back to the public comment review tool. And I'll take note that Claudia does have a couple of comments, but they'll be reserved when we get into the detailed discussion of the report. So basically here, working group response will be, acknowledging the statement kind of per some of our previous statements and the recommended action. I'll just make note that they were highlighted in this draft version of the report as well and be reviewed by the working group. And I just noticed coming through on email, it looks like Mary's email submitted to the list has come through. So FYI, the draft motion document that she sent has just been sent to the list finally. Okay, moving on to the next comment. And I believe this is back to the Red Cross submission with regard to the section that I had highlighted as more or less eligibility criteria. Here I kept the abstract fairly simple, but it was basically statements regarding the legal basis for the protections for Red Cross, Red Crescent designations. I believe that this is something that has been reviewed with the working group within our eligibility criteria discussions in the earlier stages of our working group. Essentially, they're highlighting the fact that the 1949 Geneva Convention and additional protocols, as well as legislation in over 130 countries, provide the legal basis, as well as the ICANN General Counsel's research that was performed earlier in our deliberation. Does anybody have any comments or suggested discussion in regard to this continued comment submitted by the Red Cross? And Stefan, please do speak up if I have mischaracterized anything of the comment that was submitted. Seeing no hands and not hearing anything, so I'll move on to our last comment, which was submitted by Brian Beckham. I believe he's affiliated with Validius, which is a smaller organization within the DNS industry. More particularly, pointed out or he focused in on the exception procedure that we had within our final report and that it should be amended for third parties and reflect coexistent principles under international law. I did highlight this in the final or in this version of the final report for us to review, and I believe Chuck had pointed that out as well and to include the statement. So in terms of time, we will most specifically be addressing this when we review through the final report. Stemming from that discussion, I'll update the working group response and any recommended action as we have that dialogue here in a few minutes. Okay, pretty much as you can suspect, after the call, I will update the public comment review tool with the working group responses, any final action. With exception of these last four, all the previous actions have been highlighted in the final report one way or another and or the edits have been changed. I'll send out a final version of this particular tool. And if there are any additional feedback or comments that the working group would like to submit, please send those to the list, and I'll be sure to incorporate them. And then just lastly, stating this will also become a supplement that we include with the final report just to make reference to the working group's activities and how we reviewed the comments and any actions that we thought were necessary to amend the report. Any final comments for the public comment review tool before I move over to the final report? Very good. Now the good stuff. Let's see, here's the final report. I think I have it listed as version 1.5 within the Adobe Connect room, just so that everyone's clear, and I wanted to make sure that this was stated. After we had submitted our draft final report for the public comment period, that was essentially version 1.0, and then I created a version 1.1, which just had some minor updates that had been submitted from working group members. But versions 1.2 to 1.4 was essentially the reorganizing of the report. And as you've noticed, the recommendations have been floated to the top, as well as we extracted recommendations that had divergence down into a section that shows or that's listed as unsupported proposals. And we'll get to those in a few minutes. But the reason why we jumped from 1.1 to 1.4 is those major changes offered up too much of a red line, and so I had accepted those. But just to make clear that there weren't any real content changes per se, but more just reorganizing the document itself to make it somewhat digestible when reviewing in a red line version. So 1.4, which was sent out to the list, and I think last night I even sent out 1.5. That includes changes that were submitted by the registry stakeholder group and any other suggested changes that we've highlighted as a result of review of the public comments. So with that in mind, I'm going to start on what is page 9. Listed in the Adobe Connect room. And, Chuck, this one is actually for you real quick. One of the suggestions that you had mentioned was a statement within the minority view, which is extracted from the working group guidelines. And you had suggested that it basically states, originally, minority view refers to a proposal where a small number of people support the recommendation. And you had made the suggestion, basically, a small number of people do not support the recommendation. I think first and foremost, that this was a pure extraction from the working group guidelines, and I'm hoping that we can avoid amending those. I think it's probably clear that that first statement is somewhat confusing and probably is more in line with our recommendation of passing this over to the SDI to review the consensus scale and perhaps clarify some of the language here. So I just wanted to alert you to the fact that that particular change, I'm not so sure that we should incorporate that into this version.
Thanks, Barry. That's fine, and that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir. Another quick highlighted change, I think Chuck had suggested about adding the note that essentially any recommendation that we have that has at least strong support are included in our recommendations matrix, and any of the other recommendations or what we're calling proposals now are listed in the unsupported section. I think there is a highlight about one particular recommendation that maybe needs to be migrated up to the top, but I just wanted to ensure that we had the accurate consensus level before making that change. And just to remind anybody that has a comment or suggestion, please raise your hand and interrupt at will as we move through this. This next little section, again, is just basically to make the connection from our consensus call document and listing out the groups and individuals that had submitted for the consensus call, as well as an additional footnote in that regard. And I did also take in the suggestion that We don't have an exact URL address for the supplement document of our consensus call, and we won't really have that until I submit that to web admin, which means that also this document is submitted to the GNSO Council to fill the gap. I referred users to the IGO, INGO webpage that'll have the section with the final report and all of its supplemental links that can be found there. So that's just kind of an interim change. And so I think that'll take us into actually reviewing our recommendation tables. The first section is 3.1 regarding the Red Cross, Red Crescent recommendation. Essentially, the only change here was removing or extracting the divergent recommendations here and listing them in the unsupported. Stefan, I think you had made a mention earlier that they weren't included in the report, which is not the case. For those recommendations that we had detailed for each organization, they are included in the not supported, and they are listed there. They still have their divergence consensus level designation, but those particular recommendations are still included within the report. I think you were mentioning it in regards to whether your minority position statement needed to be updated or not, but again, just to let you know that they are still included in the report. They're just down in the lower section. The one comment that I had here with respect to the Scope 2 identifiers, and originally it was actually going to be a couple of comments, and this was prior to the working group making the decision of separating out the divergent recommendations. You know, when we originally defined the scope of the identifiers, we probably should have carried it a little bit further in that in adding an actual Scope 3, which would make the distinguishment between the acronyms versus the full names of the 189 National Red Cross Red Crescent Society names. Because originally we had in our consensus call a more general recommendation with respect to Scope 2 names for IGOs. And when we floated that and basically placed those recommendations across the organization, it kind of forced the expansion of some of these recommendations that are redlined here. But we'll get to those. That distinction is not so much necessary anymore, trying to expand into a Scope 3 identifiers. And we'll touch on that when we get into the lower section. But for the sake of documentation, my question here was, and this is directly pointed at you, Stefan, in the submission of any of the communications around these 189 Red Cross, Red Crescent societies, do you have a definitive list of those that we can include as a footnote and possibly as a supplement to the report, just to make sure that we complete our documentation? If not, I don't think it's a showstopper, but in terms of just trying to complete the documentation, if you have that and can send it to me, I'd be happy to include it in the report. Stefan, please.
Yes, thanks very much, Barry. Stefan Henkin, Red Cross, Red Crescent. Yes, indeed, it has taken it's been quite an effort to put this together because we, you know, we intended, you know, to provide the names of the respective National Red Cross, Red Crescent societies, not only in English as we had done previously, in a previous communication, but we have now indeed a full list of the identifiers and designations of the respective organizations in the relevant languages. It's a table. So I don't know, you as you seem to be saying, you would like to annex that, right?
If that's okay with you, it's really more just an idea that I thought of. If you don't think it's necessary, we don't have to do it. But in terms of just completing the documentation, if we don't make it an annex, we can certainly make it as a supplement with some of our other documents as well.
Very well, Barry. Stefan Hankins again. So we'll consider that and submit this to you with, you know, with our eventual revisions, at least to correct the numbers of the recommendations inserted in our minority opinion. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, sir. Okay. Looks like I think that's all the responses or questions I had for the first section of Red Crescent recommendations. As I mentioned earlier, you know, with the BC submitting their support, they were supportive of the recommendations as well, just to reinforce the levels of consensus that we had for here. So if there are no other hands or comments, I'll move on to the IOC, and which is on page 14, section 3.2. I didn't have any comments or suggested edits here. I think this was pretty straightforward, especially with regard to the review of the public comments, and just reinforces two stakeholder groups that are not supportive of these recommendations. But I didn't have anything highlighted here for anything changed, needed to be changed in the report. So I'll move on to the IGO section 3.3. Very similar to the Red Cross, those recommendations that didn't obtain support, we have extracted out and pushed to the unsupported section, which we'll get to in a moment. The only other new item listed here is a new footnote, just basically describing the languages that were mentioned here, and I don't think we have IGO representation here, but basically this is just a quick heads up and certainly something that the implementation review team will have to take on and determine how it's going to be organized. But essentially within our scope of our identifiers, we've identified up to two languages for the IGOs listed in the list provided by the GAC. And that's something that will have to be likely supplied to ICANN. I'm not sure there's a way that ICANN can try to determine which languages would be appropriate for which organization. So that, as well as any entry into the clearinghouse in general, will need to The IRT will have to need to work out a way how that information can be obtained and eventually not only bulk added into the clearinghouse for respective recommendations, but as well as the implementation of creating any kind of reserve list. Just as an example, the existing Specification 5 reserve list that has the current identifiers from the Red Cross IOC and the IGOs, you'll notice how ICANN has implemented in detail a particular string that includes the string itself with, you know, without any spaces, but it also includes dashes in between whole words of a particular organization's name, as well as the XN dash dash label for that particular string, which is basically the IDN conversion of that string from Latin script into IDN. So it's a very extensive table. I think there's approximately 627 unique strings that are identified in that, even though the original list from a Latin script perspective is much smaller. So they're trying to cover the possible permutations in how a particular string could be registered and they just want to ensure that they're encapsulating the entire reservation. Okay, I think the first few recommendations here are pretty straightforward in terms of the support consensus or divergence. And I think what we wanted to touch on here is on the next or the second chart, which is in regard to the second level protection of exact match acronyms, scope 2 identifiers for IGOs, and that they're bulk added into the trademark clearinghouse. I think originally we had a strong support but significant opposition as a level of consensus for this recommendation, noting that the NPSG doesn't support this. However, there was a statement from the IPC that they could support this where the acronym is the primary identifier for the entity. And then I have some comments listed over here. The first comment, BAC3, I think I just both basically mentioned, you know, this is something that the IRT will have to take a look at in terms of how they acquire the contact information necessary to enter into the clearinghouse. And but then my next comment is more important with respect to the consensus level designated here. Yes. My apologies. That's the next one. But what I did want to list here is the comment BAC6, which is basically retesting the consensus level for scope 2 acronyms entering the trademark clearinghouse. The BC did state that they supported that, and I was curious if our current level of consensus level matches what we have listed in the clearinghouse. Essentially, you know, there is full consensus for 90-day claims, but that recommendation, you know, probably doesn't become relevant if there's not at least consensus level for the acronyms entering into the clearinghouse. One needs the other. And I'll stop there. Alan, I see your hand raised.
Yeah, I realized as you were talking that when you were mentioning that positions of business constituency could change the consensus levels, I realized that ALAC at-large staff did not submit the support or non-support part of our statement. The text refers to the ALAC positions being at the end, but they're not. I will make sure that the group gets the copy and make sure that statement is amended to reflect what it should have included, because we did include a table of all the recommendations and whether we agree or disagree. So I will get that to you. It may that may again alter the consensus levels, because there were a number of recommendations in the draft report which only arose late in the game and were not something we commented on before. So I will make sure you get that that part of the ALAC statement, and we'll make sure that the formal statement is amended. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alan. I'm hopeful, or what I have understood is that, because I think as part of the consensus call, the ALAC was very careful to use the exact recommendations and state your support or non-support, which are included in the consensus call document. I guess maybe what may not be clear is whether any of those have changed based on the most recent deliberations by the ALAC. And I'll just note that the reason why the BC submission in the public comments is because they did use this form, and they weren't a part of the actual consensus call document. So I just wanted to add those because they did line up with what we were trying to accomplish here.
There was some reorganization and splitting of things from the time of the consensus call to the time that the report was published, and that caused a little, you know, it wasn't obvious to me at the beginning until I started counting and realized there were different numbers in some cases.
That's correct, and that was based off of the feedback that we had received prior to releasing the draft final report, that the acronym recommendations were attributed to each organization, whereas when we did the consensus call, it was in a more general nature of all of the organizations.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with having done that. I just realized when I realized that, I realized that we needed to submit something that mapped to the current to the recommendations in the report, and therefore that may change the consensus call. I missed the number of calls just before the draft final went out, and that's probably why our position was not updated.
All right, great. Thank you, Alan. So just to reconfirm with the working group then, if you'll notice that the comment labeled as BAC4 over to the right, and I just want to reconfirm with what we have listed here is still the correct designation of strong support, significant opposition. And what I have from our consensus call is, basically PI supports, the IGOs supported, the IOC had supported, RL or Rodenbaugh didn't support, which is an individual. ALAC had mentioned that they supported, the registry stakeholder group mentioned they supported. The NCSG said that they supported with opposition, and if I recall, our interpretation was that within the NCSG that they had opposing views as to whether they should be allowed access into the clearinghouse or not. And I think that the same for the IPC. They had mentioned that they didn't support except for cases where it could be demonstrated that the acronym was used as their primary identifier. And then lastly, the ISPCP and the CBUC did support it. So I'm going to open this up to the working group and especially Thomas as chair. Based on our review of the public comments and our consensus call, are we still good with strong support but significant opposition, or is it possible that this may be as elevated to possible consensus? Thomas, it sounds like maybe you came off mute.
Oh, sorry, I was, yes. Well, I actually, I would keep this as strong support but significant opposition, but it's certainly a borderline case, so I'd be more than happy to get some views from the working group members.
All right, thank you, Thomas. Anybody else have any opinions or suggestions about how we have this listed here? If not,
Barry, it's Alan. Which item are we on?
This is on what is currently designated as Recommendation 5 for the IGOs, which is second-level protections of exact match acronyms for Scope 2 identifiers being added to the clearinghouse. And as a reminder, there was consensus level for 90-day claims notification if there is consensus to get them into the clearinghouse. And what we're trying to determine is based on the feedback that we got from the BC and their support of this recommendation, is it possible that this recommendation could be elevated to a level of consensus? If there's not enough agreement, then perhaps it remains as strong support but significant opposition.
And maybe I should add to what I said earlier that when we did the original assessment of the consensus level, we did not in any way just do counting of noses, as Greg Shatton called it in one of his earlier emails to the list. But that would also include the oral or informal feedback from the registrars at the time. Maybe that's just to further illustrate why I would not immediately jump to changing the consensus level on this one.
All right, great. Thank you, Thomas. All right, I think for the time being, we'll keep it as strong support but significant opposition. I suspect that this is where it can kind of get perhaps maybe a little sticky when this is elevated for the GNSO Council to review. Currently, I think we'll just leave it as is. I'll keep an additional highlight on it when I submit the next version up until we're ready to conclude our review of the final report and submit it to the council, and we'll move on from there. Okay, moving on, I think that will take us into the IMGO's section. And which is section 3.4 on page 18. The first thing that I'll point out is very similar to the previous organizations. We extracted the divergent recommendations out of this section and pushed them into the unsupported section below. And then what I'd like to start off with first and foremost is under the Scope 1 identifiers, I did add a new footnote, again, pointing that the IRT will need to take a closer look at this on how this could be implemented. And certainly, having reviewed through some of the ECOSOC lists, there are a couple of challenges there, such as organization names that exceed 63 characters, as well as highlighting the fact that because I think there is support for these organizations to enter the clearinghouse. The general consultative status list is rather small and perhaps manageable, but the special consultative status list is rather extensive, something along the lines of 2,000-plus names, and if there is the adoption of that list being entered into the clearinghouse, that could be an implementation challenge of trying to acquire that much contact information to be bulk added into the clearinghouse. So, again, more implementation than anything else, but I just wanted to highlight it for the group's attention. So basically here on recommendation one, as a result from our draft final report and the consensus call, it did appear that we had a level of consensus for reserving or exact match school name of Scope 1 identifiers for INGOs and that they be placed and eligible for delegation, which is the general consultative status list. We had the level of consensus based on the public comments that we received from the BC, the business constituency. They have highlighted that they do not support this, since existing mechanisms for rights objections and GAC advice are adequate to block undesired delegation at the top level. So as you'll see, the edit here, I've also included that the CBUC doesn't support this, and then I'd ask the working group if there's, does this possibly change the level of support that we have designated, or more importantly, chair, but everybody within the working group. Shall this remain consensus, or is it possible that this gets a significant support, strong support, but significant opposition?
This is Thomas. I'd very much like to hear from working group members as well. Claudia.
Hello, Thomas and Barry. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. We would like to suggest to you that the scales remain at consensus. But before I highlight some of the points we'd like Thomas, you, and the group to consider, I'd just like to say that this has been a first for us in many ways, and we humbly appreciate all the hard work that everybody has put in for this working group over the last year and continues to put in. We think that the appropriate level of consensus for the recommendation to reserve full names of some 140 INGOs should remain at consensus. And first, because many supported this recommendation during our deliberations, and many could abide by it. And as we can see, only two groups submitted that they didn't support it. We feel this number matches other recommendations where consensus was rightly found and shouldn't tip the scales against it. Also, unfortunately, this comment came in a few hours after the close of the comment period and doesn't seem to have been previously highlighted, so we couldn't submit some points of clarification, but we'd like to submit them here for you to keep in mind for your consideration. The comment expressed an expectation, as Barry just mentioned, that INGOs be able to rely on LROs and the GAC advice for protection of their full name at this level. Well, first, of course, the GAC advice woefully excludes the INGOs dealt with in this particular recommendation, so we're not sure where the reliance on the GAC advice in this context comes from. And also, as for the LRO, we note that not all INGOs have trademark protection for their full name, that they would need to be able to show to submit an LRO. And we wonder that for those INGOs that could rely on such trademark protection, we didn't see any distinction between those and other international organizations like the IOC that has trademark protection for its full names, but received support in this comment for similar top-level protection. And finally, I would just like to frame these considerations in prior sentiments from ours and other corners regarding the protection of INGOs in this particular program. We're talking about INGOs that do meaningful and recognized work on an international level. We'd like to submit that the protection of their full names at top level doesn't represent a cumbersome recommendation, but rather grounds a real way forward for the protection of INGO names and would reflect a recognition that we've seen week upon week that if we grant protections to international organizations, we should include INGOs. We hope that it is in this light, Thomas and the group, that you will carefully consider and agree that the current level should remain at consensus. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudia. My tendency, unless I hear more arguments from the group, would be to also maintain the original consensus level for that recommendation. Again, this might also be a difficult call, but taking into the equation what the earlier responses by the registrars were, you know, we would have the registrars being in favor of this one if my memory doesn't fail me, but Barry will hopefully correct me. And for recommendation number 5, there was an against by the registrars, which I think should at least be taken into consideration when determining the consensus level.
All right, great. Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Claudia, as well. Appreciate the feedback. So if I understood that correctly, we'll leave it as is, and then we'll go ahead and move forward. Which I think takes us down to page 19. And actually, this is trying to gather my thoughts here. Oh, okay. So just like to highlight, so what is listed as recommendation 3 for the INGOs is basically about an exception procedure for any identifiers that were reserved within specification 5. I think this is kind of one of the same types of recommendations that we had, and we'll review this when we get into the unsupported ones, but it didn't appear that there was support to reserve, I think to reserve second-level INGO identifiers in Specification 5. Therefore, this particular recommendation would most likely become mute if there is no reservation of those names. And we'll come back to this in a minute. I just wanted to highlight that, and I guess the question that I have to the working group is, if there isn't adequate support for reservation of second-level names in Specification 5, should we even include this recommendation in the package on the exception procedure? And I think it was one of those situations where most stakeholders would say they supported it if, in fact, it did get reserved at Spec 5, even though there wasn't necessarily support for it. Alan, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I think it should be included. The rationale is included in what I said before. I don't believe that what we're submitting is something that can be implemented without possible additions or making sure that it's a wholly consistent document. Therefore, it is possible that those names are included or are reserved, in which case they should be, you know, the message that they should then be put into the trademark clearinghouse is relevant. So I believe that we should be passing that message on.
Great. Thank you, sir. And I believe when we get down to the unsupported section, this is one of the recommendations that I think is still highlighted as significant support strong support, but significant opposition, and I think that will probably be making this a little bit more complete. And basically, I think Chuck had basically stated the same thing in his follow-up comment here as well. So we'll come back to that page. Alan, I see your hand still raised. I just want to make sure I got you covered. All right. Thank you, sir.
No, that was old.
Okay, that takes us now down to the general recommendations section, which is on page 22, and which is designated as section 3.5. In general, I think, the biggest changes here, there's several big changes here. First and foremost are regarding the first and second recommendations with respect to top and second level reservation protections of acronyms. And I think that there's been extensive dialogue about the level of support that has been listed here. The other, the one change that hasn't, or I should say the one recommendation that hasn't changed is regarding creating an issue report for a possible PDP on UDRP URS protection. So I think we're good to go there. A new recommendation was added that based on these first two recommendations that the SDI should take a look at the consensus levels that are defined in the working group guidelines. And then lastly, these two recommendations about the acronym identifiers were listed as consensus again. And primarily the rationale for that is because some sort of action will need to be taken in regards to no support on protecting acronyms, which is why they are listed here. There are several footnotes that were appended to provide rationale for this. I won't read through those, there's definitely some content here, and I do invite working group members to pick through the language I have listed here to make sure that I've captured it correctly. Thomas, I see your hand is raised, please.
Ah, okay, because I didn't see my hand was raised in my mobile Adobe Connect version. I'm not sure whether we've already reached that point, but talking about the general proposals, there is one, which is number two, which is flagged strong support but significant opposition. And I just wanted to point out that Chuck was correct in stating on November the 4th that it is inconsistent to place this very recommendation in this section of the report, but it should rather be elevated to the other recommendation so that we have everything down to SSBSO. In one place and not in other sections as well.
Great. Thank you, Thomas. And I will take that action. I think the only reason that I didn't elevate it initially is just because I wanted to confirm with the working group that we did indeed have the right level of support, but that is definitely an action I'll be taking. Okay, any other comments about how we had the general recommendations presented thus far? All right, great. Let's move on to the next section, which is a newly hi, Claudia, please go ahead.
Sorry, Barry, I didn't mean to stop you, but I'd just like to say that we're really pleased with the general recommendation section. We thought that it was very, very clear, and so we just wanted to congratulate you and on that particular section. We were very comfortable with that. So just wanted to note that.
All right. Thank you, Claudia. I think the congratulations are for the working group, not me. But this is more the will of the working group and the assessment of chair. But the process seems to be working. Okay. So section 3.6 is what is a newly created section, which is essentially the unsupported proposals. We do have a few small paragraphs of just to introduce this section, and essentially, and I think Chuck made a very good point. I think originally I had the general recommendations that were, I'm sorry, the general proposals that weren't supported first, and just to increase the continuity of how we positioned our recommendations by across the four organization types, and then general. I rearranged those and pushed the general unsupported proposals down to the bottom. So within this section essentially is those proposals that weren't supported or did have or classified as divergent. And we thought it was good to leave out the details. And so just as a reminder or refresher, again, originally when we did the consensus call, we had a more general recommendation about the protection of Scope 2 type names. In publishing the draft final report, we applied that across the four organization types so that there was a representation of a more packaged-based approach on the possible types of recommendations, but based on community feedback and working group deliberation, it seemed best to extract the divergent recommendations out while we still maintain the specific language of that proposal. And I think the main motivation here as well is in terms of how these are going to be presented at the council level and beyond, and thus the organization the way that it exists today. You'll notice that I do have a couple of comments listed over to the right about retesting the consensus, which I don't think those apply any longer. So I'll make sure that, and it's basically just trying to restate what I mentioned about how these recommendations or these proposals were included in this section. And so I'll go ahead and move along. There was not a section regarding the IOC, so that'll take us over into the IGOs, and as we discussed a little bit ago, the same logic applies, as I just mentioned, for the Red Cross. What I would like to highlight, which we did just discuss, was, or no, I think the I misspoke. The IGOs are fine. It's the INGOs where we have the my bad. I'm confusing myself, which I'm sure is confusing you guys, so I apologize for that. It was in relation to the general proposals. I'm sorry. Just give me one second, please. I need to get my bearings. I feel like I'm missing something. Okay. Sorry about that. I confused myself immensely. So I was misspeaking about a recommendation within the IGOs or the INGOs down in this unsupported section. What it is it was under the general section about IGOs, INGOs being allowed to participate in the sunrise phase. And as Chuck pointed out, this should be elevated to the above sections. And I think what this will require is that, you know, this is basically for all IGOs and INGOs. So what will have to occur here is that there will be a new recommendation added for the Red Cross, the IGOs, and the INGOs. It'll still list as sunrise participation if they're allowed to enter into the clearinghouse. It'll still remain strong support but significant opposition, noting that the registry and the NCSG don't support it. But very similar to our acronym type recommendations, this one to apply appropriately will be applied to the Red Cross, IGOs, and INGOs. And I think we're all in pretty much agreement on that, but any comments or last-minute thoughts before I take action in that regard? And as Chuck stated, that will provide the consistency we're looking for based on our statements and actions prior. Hearing nothing and seeing no hands there. Alan, please.
Yeah, just a comment. I'm double timing here, so I'm not putting my, unfortunately, full attention into this call. I would appreciate if after the call you go through the table I sent and make sure that they're there's nothing in the ALAC's last position that has significantly altered the consensus call. I don't think there will be too many of them that you're not already changing, but I do ask you to do that.
Absolutely, I will. And if I do detect any changes, basically I'll start with the comparison from the consensus call document and make sure that we're aligned there, and then just do a secondary sweep within the recommendations that we have listed here in the final report to make sure we got
okay. Thank you. I just wanted to note that you're periodically asking, is there anyone on this call who disagrees? And unfortunately, I'm doing two things at once and not 100% paying attention. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, sir. Okay, moving forward then. I think from there, that takes care of our recommendations and unsupported proposals sections. And now we move over into the section regarding the implementation considerations on incumbent GPLDs. I came across, I was doing a little homework last night, and I added a new comment that I thought I would just ask to the working group real quick. I know that we've outlined some general principles on how this would potentially be implemented, and clearly the implementation review team will have to take a strong look at how these will be applied. But something that popped into my mind is, you know, that it was clear that we had a lot of public comment feedback regarding, you know, infringing on existing property rights and what would happen in terms of how names would potentially be recovered within the existing or the incumbent GPLDs. And one thing that I don't think that we discussed, and it may not even be necessary to mention it here, but I just wanted to bring it up, is, you know, there are some existing registrations within existing PLDs that are, in fact, owned and or used by the organization seeking protection. And is it worthy of noting that distinction versus a name that is not owned by an organization seeking protection? And do we need to draw out that distinction at all, or is it worthy of just not touching? Alan.
Thank you. Since I hope we're making it really clear that the working group is not recommending
that there be any explicit action to try to deregister existing names. I don't think there's any need to call it out.
Great, thank you. I mean, that's what my gut was telling me, but I just wanted to ask to make sure.
Yeah, I would like to review, while I have the microphone, review the section that was talking about registrars reassigning domain names to a different registrant to make sure that that, in fact, covers what I originally raised on that one.
Yes, and this is the bullet, the third bullet from the bottom. If there's any kind of feedback from working group members, I want to make sure we did get a lot of public comments on this, I think mostly stemming around confusion of whether acronyms are going to be protected or not, and certainly some specific comments targeted on the language that we have listed here. So I do ask that all working group members strongly scrutinize the language that we have listed here so far. But more to your point, Alan, I think what we have listed now and definitely provide feedback is if a second-level name that matches a protected identifier as identified via any consensus policies defined here becomes eligible where the last registrant is not involved in any subsequent transaction, the name shall not be eligible for registration or transfer and become immediately reserved. Secondary sentence is at the time the name completes eligible grace period and becomes eligible for deletion, the name shall not be reallocated by the registry and shall be deemed ineligible for registration per the defined policy. Alan, please.
Yeah, I'm not sure this covers it. The reason is that some registrars in the past, and maybe still, I don't know, have made it a policy that the original registrant gets a percentage of the revenue from the from the resale, essentially, and that may be deemed to be involved. So I think this is going to have to be, wording is going to have to be done a little bit more carefully than that, than what we have here. But I'm glad to work with you and try to suggest something if you'd like.
Absolutely. I definitely want to make sure we get this right. Most obviously the IRT is going to, you know, really have to take a deep dive into all of this. But the better we can clearly state it for them, like you've mentioned, the better off we'll all
be.
My
personal feeling is we should make explicit what we're talking about and let the IRT worry about the implementation. But, you know, for someone who doesn't realize what the exact process is, I'm not sure they would get from this bullet what we're talking about. So I'll propose something to you.
Please. And, you know, this is kind of my third strike at it, if you will. And I think one of the key phrases that you had mentioned in last week's call is most specifically where the registrant is no longer involved in any subsequent transaction.
Yeah,
I think is very clear, or is a beginning for that statement to be clear as to what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, we have to make sure that involved does not cover receiving $10, which could obviate it. Okay, I'll send the list something that I'll propose.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I think that's all the highlights for this section. Then we move on to, I believe, the exception procedures. And again, I have highlighted first and foremost that this is again something else that the IRT is going to have to take a strong look at with regard to the exception procedures because they do apply to both top and second level. I think most of the focus of these procedures let me restate. I think most of the discussion around these procedures stemmed or was in regards to the organization seeking protection and how can they get them unprotected if they should choose to register them. And I think one of the strong comments that we got within the public comments themselves is that we should understand that this was, again, specifically from Brian Beckham, and he was touching on the fact that, you know, that there should be consideration for a legitimate party as well to traverse any kind of exception procedure that is mentioned here. I think, you know, it was mostly in the context of the acronyms, you know, and certainly I think we've all identified that there could be several legitimate possible uses for acronyms other than the organization seeking protection. But even though we're not recommending that acronyms be reserved, there are still a couple of strings that there is support for those reservations where there still could be some competing interest involved. And so at the end of it all, the commenter just, I think he wanted us to take a closer look to make sure that we have the appropriate language here, that it's not just about the organization seeking protection, but as well as possible legitimate use by entities other than those organizations getting protection. So I won't draw out any more details unless anybody else has any additional comments here. But again, I do ask working group members to strongly scrutinize what we have listed here to make sure that we're going to steer the IRT in the appropriate direction. Okay, hearing and seeing no comments. I think that pretty much takes us through the remainder of the report. As I mentioned, the minority position statements, we're going to make individualized supplements for each of the organizations submitting them. As a reminder, we're tentatively targeting next Friday at 23:59 to have any minority positions submitted. And so I'll definitely, you'll see those changes in this next version of the report. And then lastly, I'll just draw your attention to the background section. I have one other action item in here that I neglected to do last night. I spaced it, but there were a couple of new events that occurred that do belong in the background section, and I think that involves the MGPC's response back to the GAC advice on the protection of acronyms, as well as the IGO coalition also sent a note to the GAC in response to the board's statement or the MGPC statement. So I'll make sure that those are included in the background section as well to ensure we've covered all of the major events that have occurred through our deliberations. So I think that's it for review of the final report. I appreciate your feedback on that. It looks like we have about 18 minutes, and that will take us into trying to review the draft resolution. Mary, I'm going to put you on the spot and turn it over to you to kind of start discussing the approach. And while you're doing that, I'm going to PDF the what you have sent out so that I can get it presentable up in the Adobe Connect room. And if anybody has any comments about the draft resolutions, please do raise your hand. So, Mary, over to you, please.
Sure. Thanks, Barry, and thanks, everybody. We do recognize that, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of time to review the resolution, whether in the earlier version or the one that was just sent out. So thanks to Jim, Stefan, and others for saying that you probably will have some feedback and getting those to us as soon as you possibly can. I assume that we can continue this discussion at the next meeting if we do have one. So for now, at Barry request, just to reiterate what I said in the first email I sent with the draft motion, that it's a pretty long motion, as you have seen. The whereas clauses are pretty long, and the idea there is really so that for someone who has not been following this discussion that closely, including possibly some board members who may not be on the NGPC, for example, who may still be called on to vote on something, they can look at the whereas clauses and get a sense of the history of this work, not just how the working group was formed specifically, but the context, what happened with the GAC, what were the other communications and letters and so forth. On the resolve clauses, what you'll notice, and I know that some of you will probably have comments about this, the resolve clauses, we did not choose to reproduce word for word all the recommendations, even just the consensus recommendations. First of all, we thought that this would make the motion rather long and difficult. Secondly, we felt that it was imperative for the council and the, everyone interested in this to not just look at the resolve clauses, but to really go to the report itself and look at the actual language, as well as some of the other proposals that did not get support and the footnotes and minority statements. We thought that was very important, and that's a point that we intend to emphasize to the GNSO Council. As discussed in last week's working group call, those recommendations that we called out in the draft for voting are just the consensus recommendations. So thank you all for the discussion today about some of the borderline ones. And again, you know, we will remind the council that they should feel free to discuss the non-consensus recommendations, perhaps especially those that have strong support. So those are just the introductory comments, and I see, Barry, you've got the document up. I suppose in the time that remains, if anyone has any specific feedback or just general questions, it will be helpful if you can raise them so that we can take them on board for the next meeting. I think I just put everyone to sleep, Barry.
Thank you, Mary. So anybody have any comments or suggestions around this? As Mary said, it is a very in-depth and detailed resolution. Hopefully there's some kind of trophy at the end for whoever gets to read this at the council meeting. But I think that it is very important that we be as descriptive as possible while still maintaining a general nature of shaping these into the forms of consensus policy. Jim, please.
I was just going to say we'll have our comments to you by the end of the day today, but just for Mary, on the description of what's going to be I guess it's the section in regard to each of the organizations seeking protection, for the IOC at least, it says for the top level, exact match, full name, identifiers for the IOC that are exact matches of the organization's full name. I think that could be somewhat confusing, and I think we're going to recommend that it say something like top level, exact match, full name, scope one identifiers of the IOC that are exact matches of the that are exact matches of, and then maybe we can put in Olympic and Olympiad in the case of the IOC, since it's not the full name of the organization that's being protected, but two of the names owned by the organization.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for that. And actually, you know, in looking this over, Barry and I just thought of that too. I mean, I think one of the things we were trying to do was get some consistency. So your comment, as well as if you whatever you put in writing for us today, that will be very helpful. We do want the working group to feel comfortable with the language, as well as to correct any inaccuracies that we may have inadvertently included.
Thanks, Mary. But we'll get you our comments Again, it's about going on two. We'll have them to you probably by late today.
Great.
Thank you, Jim.
Any other comments or questions about the draft motion that we have thus far? Okay. If not, then before I turn it back over to Thomas, I'll just, again, mention to the working group members, you know, we certainly have a number of changes to apply to the existing work products. We'll have those sent out later this afternoon. Again, there's going to be another draft motion that will be sent based on some members' feedback. I will be sending out a new, the next version of our final report. And as I mentioned, you know, there are several changes to our charts that will be updated and migrated to the appropriate section. We talked about the minority position statements. I will send out a separate email noting the deadlines on any changes to the final report, as well as the deadline for submitting updates to the minority position statements and/or new ones. And I think there's probably one other document that I owe you as well. So the question that I have for the working group, so as mentioned earlier, we do have two sessions scheduled tomorrow and Friday at 14 UTC. If working group members think it's necessary to meet for those tomorrow, we'll have the meeting. If not, we can just meet on Friday, or if need be, we can meet on both days, and we'll just kind of feel out for what the participation looks like.
Barry, maybe I can jump in at this point, because I guess that the request to working group members is sort of a two-layered request. You correctly mentioned that we need to find out from working group members whether you all have questions with respect to the final report or the language of the motion. But at the same time, I'd like to extend that request to the groups that you're representing. So should your groups have any questions, or should there be the need to further discuss or explain what we did and why we did things in order to facilitate our success or you know, the achievement of our goal to be able to present this in time to the council, and not only to do so, but also to ensure that no deferral is being asked for in Buenos Aires. So should you see any benefits in having the meeting tomorrow to answer your questions, or to bring in colleagues from your respective groups to facilitate the discussion, please do speak up now or make yourself heard or read in the Adobe. Back over to you, Barry. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Appreciate that. Mary, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, it was just something that I forgot to ask specifically of the whole working group, as well as the groups you represent, as Thomas mentioned. But I think this is specifically, especially for folks like Chuck and the registries. I don't know if Chuck is still on, because it must have been a long drive, that we do have existing language that specifically talks about application of certain consensus recommendations to existing registries. And Barry has that up on the screen now as resolve clause number 4. What we haven't got into, and we're not certain if we need to, but it might be helpful to the IRT, for example, if there was some sense as to how this can be done. Does it involve, for example, a modification of the current reserve name list? Does it involve another different kind of contractual language, or can there be an advisory to all existing registries to make the accommodations as stated? So I guess what we're asking, especially those with experience in these matters and who may be impacted by them, to look particularly carefully at this language and let us know if it's sufficient or if it should be more specific. So that's it, Barry. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. And Chuck, are you still on the call?
I am, but I'm not in a very good position to talk.
Okay.
What's the question?
No worries.
Go ahead and ask the question.
Okay. Essentially, we're just kind of looking for some feedback with regards to item number 4 in the draft resolution statements. And you're one of the more experienced persons here. Essentially, these resolution statements stem around how any of these consensus policies would be applied in the incumbent GTLDs. And we'd be interested in feedback that you might have to improve these statements to better understand how they just might be implemented, whether it's just adjustments in any current reserve names list, or would a new reserve names list be created, or are there actual contractual changes that need to be applied, or could it be accomplished through an advisory? And so we would just, you don't need to provide it now, but when you land back in front of your desk, take a good look at Section 4, and if you have any feedback or suggestions, we'd be appreciative.
Will do.
Great. Thank you, sir. All right, Thomas, I think that pretty much concludes our review. Again, I think for tomorrow, we'll go ahead and launch the call at 14 UTC, and if any of the working group members have any questions or need any clarification, please join the call. We'll be happy to answer any questions. We will still record it, and we'll also send out another reminder about Friday's session based on any of the feedback, but it sounds like we're getting pretty close, so we may not necessarily need them. So, Thomas, over to you to close out.
Yeah, thank you very much, Barry, and let me go on record by saying that both you and Mary did a sterling job in preparing all this and guiding us through this very challenging task and these complicated documents. I would say let's meet again tomorrow. If you don't have any questions, you don't have to attend, but at least we want to provide the opportunity so that all your questions are being answered. We are going to definitely have a meeting on Friday to apply finishing touches to what we did, and then hopefully we'll be able to submit the document on time, and I'm sure we will. So thanks again. I guess with this we can conclude this call, and thanks all of you for your patience and participation, and I'll talk to you tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. Bye-bye.